to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns.
What are they going to say?
No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just about Weber on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 2 only. Dow Futures down 192. So, heading south this morning here a little bit. We still got a pretty good November going. Best month since 1987. That was not a year remembered for good months, but it was a year remembered. Frank, how are you, bud?
Good, good. Bitcoin's recovered everything it lost on Friday. So, 10% down, 11% up.
It was down 3,000 at one point on Friday, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Closed down 1,900.
What is your feeling on Bitcoin?
Boy, that's a cipher, but it's the way, really the only way there's enough liquidity to play a fund, and there are funds out there, is they're all playing from the long side. You really can't play it from the short side.
No.
So it's a fool's game.
Well,
meaning that if it goes down, you're screwed. But a lot of people were starting funds at about the 7,000 level. I saw in my old job, and it had gone down to 4,500, and they were sucking wind. But if they managed to gut it out for the past 9 months, they're kings.
Well, what's your feeling on the whole idea of a, well, I'll use the term alternative currency. Where do you think that is? Where do you think that goes? Do you think these guys are it? I guess is the question.
Well, I think they're the beginning. The markets hiccup. A lot of the movements come when people can't get into the market, when the exchanges go down. And so you're caught, if you want to buy or sell, you can't get out. And we've been there before.
Right.
After 9/11. We were sitting with massive positions, I assume you were, I was, and couldn't get out because there was no trade. And it didn't matter if you were right or wrong.
The only guys who did well were the guys in New York that saw the planes whip into the building before they left. They sold spoos. I mean, it's not funny, but they did, obviously. Nasty stuff. But just in general, though, there's a lot of, I'm not going to use this term, because I don't want to lead the witness, you being the witness.
I wouldn't drop the dime on you, Tom.
Yeah, I just, what do you mean? You'd be a Karen in a second if somebody weren't wearing a face mask or something.
No, I just go. I'm social distance by nature.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's my rap name.
Well, the Stocks and Jacks emails were lit up last night with the fact that you don't wear a mask in the swimming pool. Now you should be arrested.
Well, fine. Send the cops. I don't care.
Send
them. Hey, they aren't going to. The South Side is wide open on this.
That's true. That is true.
And I have a lane by myself.
How do you know?
And they just changed the... What?
How do you know?
How do I know? Because it's reserved.
Oh.
You know, one percenters get to do that.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Well, anyway, my question is, you can ask some shall we say, more classical economic theorists, maybe like me, and say stuff like, you know, are the old rules just gone? Because we now have modern monetary theory that basically says don't worry at all about old monetary theory, just do whatever you want. That's an interesting theory, but...
You think the old rules are gone, Tom?
I don't, but they, shall we say, they're like the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. They've taken the last train to the coast, right?
I like the reference.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, when you look at currency theory, the way I read it from or learned about it from the bottom up,
classic currency theory.
The currency itself has to have some value to it. That I think the line was all currency will eventually drop down to its base value. So, mm-hmm. So you've had through the ages. It's funny how this stuff is not new. Everybody thinks everything's new, right? Every generation invents sex, but then they never could figure out how they got here if they invented sex, right? It's kind of one of the world's conundrums, right? Mom and Dad clearly don't know anything about sex, but here I am. Okay. That's fairly logical, young man or young woman, but the original Roman coins had enough silver, I think it might have some copper in some, but had enough silver in them to where the coin, one coin was essentially worth a day's pay. So there was a logic to the system. So if you had a coin, and you went to get a loaf of bread, it was like a dollar. Not that there weren't other pieces less than a dollar, but you'd say, okay, everything was worked off a day's pay in the fact that there was silver in there that had value in it. Right? Or something. I mean, ours used to be silver. Well, we had our stuff here was gold backed, and then we had silver certificates. But there was always some kind of backing. Now, of course, governments all through the eons, and now our guys are doing it now. You try and debase your currency as best you can to be able to spend more than you were supposed to spend. I mean, that's the trick. But when you have some kind of a new currency, in Bitcoin, to me, I mean, the system, the idea of what do they call the system is the Bitcoin system, how it goes from one computer to the next, has some value to it. But there's none of that value is in the coin itself, right? It's in the currency itself. So whatever that is and who owns that, God only knows. But the idea that you have a currency that's a competitor to your fiat currencies that has zero value whatsoever, to me, makes absolutely no sense. Now, if every country continues, this is one man speaking, to debase their own currency, it wouldn't surprise me. As a matter of fact, I would expect, Frank, for somebody somewhere, be it the... maybe the people from the Middle East, or I was going to say the Venezuelans, but I mean, even the Venezuelans, you would think at one point they would come out with a quote currency that would be, this note equals, one 100th of a barrel of oil or something. Or at least there's something attached to it that you can essentially, at the very least, you can go to 50 of them and get your car filled up or something. I mean, in the concentration camps, it was cigarettes, because cigarettes had a value. At the very least, you knew what a, quote, cigarette was worth to smoke, right? So, I mean,
in Berlin, after World War II, during the blockade, cigarettes were the currency.
Yeah, so there's some value to it. So the idea that Bitcoin essentially goes up and down almost like it's a stock, that to me is so far afield, I can't begin to explain it under any kind of theory that I've ever read, which doesn't mean that I don't wish I would have bought some at 1,000 or something like that. But actually, Frank, we could have, a few years ago, I looked into getting a Bitcoin machine. ATM machine.
To harvest Bitcoins?
No, it's a machine for people to put money in and get Bitcoins.
Mm.
There were a couple on the south side. Both of them were in a store, shall we say, mostly frequented by African American. So my brother goes in there just so he can be part of the Bitcoin phenomenon. He goes in and he puts like $20 in a thing. I think he got like $15 worth of Bitcoin. The rest was like fees. Or some bizarre thing like that. I mean, and we could have got one of these things for like $2,500, $3,000, maybe a little more. Because there were different levels, right? Because a high level one, if Bitcoin crashed and burned, you could turn it into an ATM machine. You could do both. yeah. But it was
and
like
put it in a bar.
Did you ever go to one of those money?
Hey, I had two Bitcoins at one point that I think I paid a dollar for. Or I signed up for something and got a Bitcoin, and of course I lost it.
And when you say you lost it, you lost your password.
I lost my password, and I've had 20 computers since then. And
God, how did I want to ask you? You knocked off my train of thought, such as it was. But but I mean, is anybody? Part of it is you want to be able to do business where nobody has their nose up your ass, basically. Someplace, somewhere, I want to be able to bet you $10 on the golf course and not let the man know about it. You know, I don't want to have to go through the currency, the system, to let anybody know that you, have paid, I owe you $10 on the golf course and that was gambling. Or somebody's going to call me up and say, why did you transfer this $10 to Frank Fahey? It's none of their damn business, in my opinion. And, you know what's interesting, Frank, is our friend, Mr. Weber is now calling me a right winger. And I remember one day, I was not at school.
Well, Maddie's a very astute person.
I remember a day where my...
You are leaning to the right, though. I will give I'll go that far.
I'm not going to compare myself to a Nobel Prize winner. But one day they asked Milton Friedman on national TV. They used to watch the guy. I really, really thought he was spectacular. And they said, how come you were considered the great liberal economist, and now you're considered the conservative economist? And he said, now that's a very good question. He goes, I haven't changed a bit. He goes, if you find that out, I really wish you'd let me know, because I'm curious about that myself. He goes, I haven't changed. I feel the exact same way and everything as I did 20 years ago. So obviously, the world has changed.
And yes, but you're the one who held yourself up as being middle of the road.
No, I actually held myself up to be liberal.
Myself.
I actually held myself up to be liberal. But finally, I have an example as to what has somewhat changed. This Supreme Court decision last week on the churches in New York. I don't know if anybody heard or cared about this one.
I read about it.
There was a Supreme Court decision that came down 5-4. You know, Trump's new majority on one side, 5, and the liberals allegedly the other side, 4. And this is for whether somebody can close, essentially, churches and assembly and those kinds of things for whatever reason, the COVID, without a defined sort of a, I didn't read the case, but I'm assuming it's without any kind of a defined crisis, without any kind of a legislative thing for any period of time. And the conservatives came down and essentially said the governor was out of line. Now, I'm going to say, Frank, that...
Now, the conservatives came down and they're... talking to smarter people than myself, as far as constitutional law, said that the decision, specifically Gorsuch's, was a political statement. His opinion was a political statement and not a legal statement.
What I'm saying is 25...
And I haven't had a chance to read it, so...
What I'm saying is 25 or 30 years ago, it would have been exactly the opposite. The liberals would have said, you can't close down churches. What's the matter with you? And now
I don't think it was liberals or conservatives. I think it was the governor of New York.
Well, whatever.
I think you're reading too much into it.
The point is...
You worry about, you seem to have a worry about fascism, and I find a lot of the control of people is far heavier on the right than the left.
It used to be. You're just not...
It still is.
No, it's not. No, it's not. All weekend, all I did was hear... Did you listen? I listened to a... Margaret Brennan.
What do you call trying to overturn an election?
I don't call Trump a
by starting rumor and innuendo.
I don't.
That is the ultimate in fascism.
Trump is an
outlier.
That's
how the Weimar Republic was destroyed. Come on, Tom.
Trump is an outlier. You can't go by him.
It's not just him. 87% of the Republican Party. And have support him. What do we have?
Well,
five senators have talked against him.
There's going to be
Louie Gohmert is saying that the FBI and the Department of Justice are behind this stealing of the election. Come on,
Frank. When you go down this road, if you say something that one side or the other or one person is doing that's unconscionable, which I've seen a lot, the tyranny right now, it's obvious to me it's coming from the left. Absolutely.
Well, what sort of tyranny? You can't go to church?
Well, that's one.
Oh, that's not a tyranny. Come on, I'll talk to you forever about the theology.
Okay.
Or the faith.
All right.
And attending.
All right. Well,
and you're going to be throwing out
any kind of assembly. What I'm saying is
that we're locked in jail for slavery and segregation.
How we're supposed to think?
We grew up, Tom, where churches said there was religious basis for segregation. We have a church that defended
a lot of people did
and
all hit stuff.
Pedophiles. Come on, I'm
the church. The church never
go holy on me.
I'm not going holy on anybody. I'm talking about any kind of freedom of assembly, freedom, those kinds of things.
Liberal cleared Lafayette Square for a photo op.
Frank, you
cleared
can,
a peaceful.
You can constantly, you can whatever it is in today's world. Okay, and this is where we don't get anywhere. To be honest with you, if I sit there and say in the middle where I am, God, the liberals are bleeped up. Look what they're doing. The conservatives are bleeped up. Look what they're doing. The last thing you need is for somebody on one side or the other to say, well, look at the other side. They're doing stuff even worse.
Fair enough.
So it means 4 years from now.
Wait, you haven't said anything about the conservatives at all a couple months.
Because right now
you'll say I don't approve of Trump, but you don't.
No, when the conservatives were in power, I was all over them because they were doing crap that I didn't like.
And well, now, they are in power.
No, they're not. They're moving away from the power, and they're clearly not in the power in a lot of the states. And you look at some of the stuff that California is doing, you look at some of the stuff that some of the schools are doing, you look at how they're changing curriculums, how we're erasing history we don't like. That to me is tyranny, Frank. History is history.
Are we erasing history, or are we telling...
No, we're erasing it.
What example?
I just had a long conversation with my significant other, and she and her cousin, who are, you know, pretty conservative, but... The kids at home, and they're having, and she was helping the kid go through his class. Frank, the history they're learning, you know, you and I we've caused all the problems in the world. Old white guys. There's no history being in there. There's nothing about what we did in World War II. Nothing about World War I. Nothing about any of those things. People are redefining the world.
You mean where we didn't have integrated army?
Oh, sure, we didn't.
Units. There's problems there, and that
sure
should
were.
Be discussed, Tom.
Not discussed, yes. Not eradicated. Big difference.
Well, we aren't eradicating it.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
bringing it up.
No, we're not. We're eradicating.
Would you agree that the Confederacy was a pack of traitors and that we shouldn't be honoring them with military bases?
I always thought that was
bizarre.
I think, like everything else, there's levels of everything, Frank. The people who... Were the quote slave owners, and that was part of their economy, didn't want people telling them what to do. All right, and first of all, slavery was a horrendous thing. Not to mention economically, they'd been better off paying everybody probably, but I mean it was a horrible
thing. And we're still paying for slavery here.
Well, we are because whatever. But I'm saying
no, we are because there was slavery, not because of anything that black people have done.
But the idea that that the people who fought on one side or the other. One thing about soldiers is that none of them want to be there on either side.
Talking about the leaders.
We don't name
any army base after a grunt unless it's Audie Murphy. Come on.
The leaders, I don't know what... We have people now that are states' writers, Frank. If California decided or Texas to get out of the Union, I think a lot of people there would go with Texas. Was it their call? No. Was it a good thing? No. But I don't know that they... I mean, I'm not so sure that Robert E. Lee would have been much happier in the Union Army. I mean,
but that's what he signed up for. He was a traitor. No question about it.
Okay, well...
And you know, we talk about Benedict Arnold as having this bad side.
Here's my concern.
Robert E. Lee's a traitor.
Okay, well...
No ifs, ands, or buts.
All right, so but here we are in 2020 with a lot of crap to do, all right? And we have Ulysses S. Grant, after the war, said, we're not going down this road. We're not going to persecute these people. We're just going to let it all go because we're one country. Uh-huh. We're one country back together. The last thing I need is some Karen going back and saying, Grant was wrong, we should have done all this stuff, and these people, they shouldn't be in the history books, they shouldn't be that. Get over it.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be in the history
books. But there are people that are going down that road. Just get over it.
What's happened is what's in the history books now is a direct result of the 1890 and early 1900s revival of rewriting of the history books.
I don't have
for the Confederacy.
I don't want to rewrite Huckleberry Finn.
It's already been rewritten.
I don't want Huckleberry Finn
by traitors.
I don't want Huckleberry Finn to be rewritten to pull the N-word out of there. I wanted it as an example of how people can beat a people and how we're never going to be that way again. They made a
let's start with a clean slate. It's happening today.
I listened to the COVID stuff this weekend, and the amount that they're draining into people. I listened to Margaret Brennan, who I actually, you know, sometimes I think she does a pretty good job. And so she's talking to the mayor of El Paso. First of all, we need to get, in one man's opinion, you need to get people who've never missed a paycheck out of this COVID debate. Essentially, either the media or the government. So, of course, Joe Biden picks.
Who's that leave?
Joe Biden picks like three people for his COVID team that have they've just been on the dole as doctors and wherever in government. So, some lady gets on there. What's her name? It begins with a Z, I think. And she starts ranting and raving about what are all these people going to do if there's no spike after Thanksgiving? Are they going to willingly go behead themselves, or what are they going to do, Frank? It's like the people at Notre Dame when they rush the field, and if they didn't have a spike 4 days later, they're all pissed off about it. I mean, this is like people watching people build a bridge, thinking they're doing it wrong and hoping the thing falls down. Where do we get these people? So then they're interviewing the mayor of El Paso, Margaret Brennan. They said to the guy, "Why aren't you closing all your bars?" He said, "I've closed them at 9 o'clock." She said, "Well, why don't you just close them totally?" And he says, well, we've done some research as best we can, and it looks like the stuff is being spread, sometimes bars, sometimes restaurants. A lot of it's being spread at big box stores. He goes, and I can't close big box stores because somehow or another they've got this exemption from the Fed or CDC. I don't know where that's coming from. He goes, I can't close big box stores. Guess what she says? Maybe you should close more.
You're quoting a newsreader.
She goes, maybe you should. She's national TV, Frank. She goes, maybe you should close
Did
more.
Did you listen to Maria Bartiromo?
Yeah.
You want to talk about totally off the rails.
I met her.
She's worse than Margaret Brennan. There's no doubt about it.
I met
Why
her.
Why are we talking about Margaret
because
Brennan?
Because yesterday she said, maybe you should close more of the other places to make up for the fact that you can't close the big box store. Explain to me how anybody can make that statement when they're a national TV correspondent. Maybe you should beat your other kids twice as much because we can't find the one who actually did the dirty deed, right?
Well, yes. You just said that we shouldn't be focusing on one person, and that's what you're doing.
But
right
I'm saying
now.
This is what
I think. Perhaps the president is a more appropriate person to focus on than a news.
But now,
one of many channels.
But these are people that are working for us right now. I've been reading all weekend because I'm
who's working for us, Margaret Brennan.
The people that Biden dragged up there, Fauci. The idea, well, the favoritism.
What about Louis Gohmert? What about the president?
In 50 days.
This is why Maddie's calling you a conspiracy.
Frank, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
You don't bring up the other side.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked all the right wingers 4 years ago. What are you going to do when you don't have Hillary to kick around anymore? What are you going to do when this guy's out of there in 50 days and he's not the cause of every problem in the world, just like Hillary?
I'm not saying he's the cause of every problem in the world.
Well, I mean, here we
but
have...
But I don't like the direction he's pointing us.
Right. But the direction right now is...
But I don't think he's a part of the problem.
The direction right now is everybody's going to have to take a vaccine. And it's only going to be the Pfizer vaccine because we're discrediting the hell out of AstraZeneca because evidently...
It should be.
They didn't pay the right person.
They screwed up the test, Tom.
They gave everybody half a dose and it worked better. How's that screwing it up?
Because it's not what they said, how they were...
They ended up with a half a dose.
What else did they screw up?
Because they ended up with half the people getting half a dose and half the people getting a full dose. It ended up being a better test in terms of data.
No, it's in terms of results.
All right, but here's what I'm saying.
I don't know enough.
All right.
I know enough about that, is that they didn't do it the way they said it.
My math...
They were going to do it.
Right.
And so
explain
that
this
raises
one.
Questions about the whole thing.
Well, you got a minute. You got to answer me this question, please.
Okay.
Everybody knows that I tested positive. And 2 weeks later,
I went
and got antibody tests, and I have the antibodies. All right, so we're coming up with essentially an antibody sort of vaccine, maybe somewhat different. Now, there has been no research whatsoever. It says that this vaccine is going to last 2 years, 1 year, 6 months. We won't know until it happens, right? We know that. Yeah, we now, my estimation, we probably have as many as 60 to 70 million people in this country that have had this disease. Would have been tested positive had they had the test, or are testing positive now. There is nothing that says, there's not one piece of scientific evidence that says my antibodies, which by the way could be used for other people and aren't, we stayed away from that one like the plague, that my antibodies aren't going to last as long as this vaccine. Yet I guarantee you that I'm going to have to take this vaccine or not go anywhere or not be able to get on a plane or whatever. Without any of this knowledge, we're going to force everybody to pay for this with us paying for it. And not knowing if it's good for people 2 years from now. I happen to think it's probably going to be pretty safe because I've read about how they made it. So I'm a proponent on that regard. But there's no science whatsoever that says it's any better than what they already have. And yet if I were to
why
say,
don't we have the science, Tom? That's where we got to go back to the beginning.
No,
What do we have to do to get the science?
You know how we have to do? We got to wait 4 or 5 years.
No, we got to start collecting data. And that's how we use data to create information.
How are we going to find the data as to whether my
unified approach because it was fascist.
All right, why
it took away freedom.
My question is, why are we making the determination right now that Pfizer's vaccine is going to last longer than my antibodies? We have no way of knowing.
Who's made that decision?
But, Frank, look around you.
I'm asking who did. I do look around me.
There's
nobody on the left wing that has the power to make that decision right now.
What are you talking about?
Who's making that decision?
Pfizer's making it. They're stuffing enough pockets, and this thing is on autopilot. What's his name?
Who's our pilot?
What did William Kennedy say? Events are in the saddle, and it drove the men hard. That's what's happening here.
Well, who's the pilot?
There isn't.
Where does the buck stop?
Every single
where
one
is the yoke that controls
every single one of the people.
Airplane Biden, of state.
Every single one of the people Biden is putting in there are on this road. We're waiting
for. But aren't there yet. They are making no decisions.
They're already making them.
They complain about what is happening right now.
They're already making them. Pfizer knows they're dealing with them, and not with Trump's people. All right, Frank, we got a dash, buddy.
Okay.
All right, buddy. S&P futures now only down 6. NASDAQ futures only up 36. Frank, we can rally today. What are we going to do?
He's in that range right now, you know.
Can't be. I want it to move.
4%, down 4%. So probably go up.
I could use
the end of the year.
I could use a 4% move.
Paint it some more.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board sharing the duties today. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures up 36. They were down 16 when we came in and unchanged, so we're rallying here as we usually do. Dow futures down 126 over in Europe. We've got, I know we got the last day of the month here. DAX up 68.5%, FTSE up 10.2%, CAC down 8.1%, so not much going on there. We're in Asia, Nikkei down 211, but it's been up like every day. It's 0.8%. Shanghai down 16.5%. Hang Seng, though, big move, down 5.53. That's 2%. China said its manufacturing activity grew in November, but they also are starting to get some problems with some loans being paid off. And, you know, it's hard to tell the volume of any of that stuff, whether it's just the headline or whether it's real. I mean, it's really hard to dig that up. Anyway, 10-year, 0.85, right where it's been. One minus 0.57 from right where it's been. Japan positive 0.02. We're all stuck. It's like that. Those numbers never change. We got oil down 44 cents, 45.09. Still pretty high. Brent down 57 cents, 47.50.61. Natural gas up 9 cents, 2.93. Probably gets to get a little colder out. RBOB down a penny, 1.26. We got gold. Whack, whack, whack. 17.72. I am just perplexed as to why we just keep pouring money in. And copper keeps going up, and gold keeps going down, and silver keeps going down, which is another pretty much halfway industrial metal, down 35 cents, but copper's up 7. This is really, really strange, but it's continuing. Who's ever doing traffic, weather, sports? What do we got? Traffic, weather, sports. Top Bears, playoff bound. Well, maybe not.
Good morning. It's 6:38 in Chicago. Traffic this morning, very light on the north and south side. Unusual for a Monday morning. Weather today, now it's 35 and cloudy. The high today, we are at our high, should be cloudy, windy, with some snow showers this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 52 and clear right now. The high will be 74 and sunny. Full slate of sports. We had college basketball, college football, and the NFL. In college football, Notre Dame wins again to go 9-0, beating North Carolina 31-17. Bears played last night in another embarrassing primetime disaster. Green Bay dismantles them 41-25.
And the game was not as close as the score would indicate.
No, it was not.
No.
All right, Tom.
What do you make of... I don't think it was on TV. I don't think. I mean, Maddie could probably have got it because he's got that NFL. But what was the deal with Denver? No quarterbacks?
Denver. All of Denver's quarterbacks were in COVID protocol, so they brought up a kid who, off the practice squad, who was a receiver, who played like two games in college. It was a complete disaster, and the NFL kind of stuck it to them because they found out that they broke protocol.
When are we going to, I don't know, I know I'm like a broken record here, when are we going to get off this routine that every person who gets this disease, even though we got probably 70 million people that have had it, it's all because you didn't pay attention to somebody.
Right. Now the NFL's shutting down all the sites after tonight and tomorrow night's game for the week.
No practice, and then they're going to play again on Sunday?
And then they'll play again on Sunday. They'll close them until they reopen them. Because the Pittsburgh game that was supposed to be Thanksgiving is now being played tomorrow night.
Is it going to be going tomorrow
night? I don't know. It's Tuesday night, Pittsburgh-Baltimore, and Baltimore supposedly has 18 guys on COVID protocol.
Why don't these guys just let everybody get it during training camp?
I kind of agree with that.
That's bizarre. Were you Mr. Flanagan with us?
I'm here, Tom.
John, how are you?
I'm well, and you?
All right, after arguing with Frank for a half hour, you know, it's always good.
I was going to ask, maybe you should take some decompression time.
I do have this bizarre feeling that whenever you talk about what one side is doing and immediately the other side's worse, you just never get anywhere with that conversation.
Well, it's just always lowering the bar.
Yeah, because the other side will find something worse. But
right.
I just, some of the Republicans finally have gotten away from it, that everything that's wrong with their world wasn't Hillary's fault. We've forgotten about her. At some point, how long is it going to take before everything's wrong in other people's world isn't Trump's fault? I mean, or at least after 50 days or whatever, how long it's going to be, you won't have him to kick around anymore. Wasn't that Tricky Dick? You won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore?
Yeah, 1962. He came back roaring 6 years later.
Yeah. And he used the poor dog. I wonder if the dog had an agent. The dog was
poor
getting
checkers, screwed.
Yeah, poor Checkers. He's on TV. Didn't even have an agent. He was getting screwed. The more I look at the money, John, and I'm looking at the, as I get all these reports from people, some of which that make some sense, I look at the stuff and I can't believe it just goes on and on and on. The incredible favoritism now we're given the Pfizer company versus the other two. Who are they paying? I mean, I'd love to see their lobbyist list.
Oh, I think it would be staggering.
Yeah,
they got their tentacles in everywhere.
I mean, how are you going to distribute something worldwide? It's got to be kept 70 below zero. I mean, the logistics of that to me are just insane. And yet we have one that's a little better, the Moderna, well, quite a bit better. It's a regular freezer, I guess, right? 10 below zero or something.
Yeah,
and then the other one is essentially a regular refrigerator. So if you had any common sense whatsoever, you'd be saying, well, I guess we can use the one in New York and Chicago and L.A. at a few places, but we should probably be looking at the other two for everywhere else, right? I mean, if you had any sense whatsoever, we're not going that direction at all, are we?
Oh, no. If we were really about doing it efficiently and enabling the widest participation in it, you would certainly go for the one that didn't involve all this ridiculous expense and logistical issues. But no, the cost is completely immaterial here, it seems. And the logistics, well, it'll be done, somebody will pay for it. But it shows just the lack of regard for doing it in a smart way. And it speaks volumes to how the whole thing has played out. It was never about being smart. It was about being profligate and stupid. So,
well, you want to be, maybe, you know what, I think it's come down to it, Jan, a little bit. Part of it is, now that I recognize what's going on more than I ever used to, maybe I'm just jealous.
I wasn't there on the first floor of all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
I knew then what I knew now.
I mean, why didn't I put some money in some refrigeration company 6 months ago? I mean, it's just.
Well, you still can, Tom.
I still can, but I mean, I won't get the same price, you know. To a certain extent, whenever you have people involved, this kind of stuff always going to happen. But it's a matter of degree. I mean, it's a matter of degree. I mean, like I said, if you go back to World War II times, I mean, I'm sure, the guy in Buffalo making the PT boat engines probably got 5% or 6% or 10% more than he should have if he knew the right people. But it was 10%. It wasn't 50. And it wasn't let's get, PT boats that don't work. We don't care as long as this guy gets the, I mean, Plus, he's selling, these people are spending the money in the local bar and place. So, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. But now it's like, do you really want to go there with something that, you know, has this kind of logistical issues? Because, I mean who's going to be the transporter? Who's going to be this? Who's going to get all these alternative jobs in this stuff? I mean, you don't think these people are all over it? They weren't eating stuffing in turkey on Thursday. They're all over these guys saying, no, you got to do this and this and this and this new bill or whatever bill's coming up. And I just, I don't know. I mean, I just, whatever it is, I would just like to, I don't know why people don't think that we're just friggin' broke here, Jen. I mean, everybody's convinced now that the states, the cities that are, especially that are Democrat, the blue states, that the checkbook's coming from Washington. Well, where's it going to come from there? I mean, I don't know. I just have a different.
Our governor here borrowed, what, $2 billion from the government to keep things afloat here before the COVID money runs out in December. So but that's got to be paid back.
Well, my question is, where does that come from? I mean, there's got to be. Is there a?
It comes from the printing press.
No, I understand that. That, and we'll explain that in a second. But you can't just do that. There has to be, for the Treasury to write the check, even if, like what Jan's talking about, if the Treasury decides to write the check to Illinois for $2 billion, let's say, they theoretically have to go out and borrow because they don't have the money. Well, they might have cash available today, okay, but somebody, if they do, it's just because it's a month where they happen to be flush, but it's going to be gone the next month. So if they go out and borrow the $2 billion from someplace, they're not really getting anywhere because the Fed is the one that's turning around and buying $2 billion worth of paper and essentially putting money back in the pool that they're taking out. So right now, as we talk about all the time, the money is essentially just being printed, okay, but still, Jen, there has to be, and you're the attorney here, there has to be a law, there has to be a fund, I almost said slush fund, there needs to be something somewhere where the Treasury can write that check, because they can't just apportion money, that has to come from the Congress, right? So there has to be part of the, is this part still part of the CARE Act, that there's money in there?
I think so, I think all, and I'm not sure how this was allocated or what limits were placed on states for getting the access to the money. But it's, you know, apparently not going to be there in 30 days, whatever the legislation was. I think this money will not be available after the first of the year. So, we'll either get it now or forget about it. So,
well, if it's part of the CARE Act, now, I mean, this is another part. I mean, obviously I haven't read the damn thing, but how do they determine whether it's a loan or not just a gift? If it's CARE Act, it might have been, there's part of that is loans and part of that's gifts. I mean, how do you determine which is which?
Yeah. I from what I read, I thought this was, you know, borrowed money, but I could be wrong about that.
But just in general, yeah. Let's try and put a fork in the road here. When you see a fork in the road, take it, Yogi. There's two kind of things. One is there's this CARE Act, which is screwing up our conversation. So it might actually be a gift to the state, all right? But in general, if a state in normal times, whatever those are, has problems with cash flow, they can probably get a loan from the federal government somehow. So there must be something allocated for that, and that I would say is probably a loan with interest. But now we don't know if this is part of that or this is part of the CARE Act. It's not with interest, right? Or low interest, or you know, if they can give the money back to them. So I mean, it's sort of fuzzy, but what I'm saying, John, is that I don't see how every state and municipality that has a problem with cash flow is going to use the federal government as their piggy bank, because I think they're at the point where I don't know where they're getting it. I mean, other than printing it. And
there can't be enough money for all 50 states to do what Illinois did.
Oh, no.
At least not at the same time, anyways.
No, I mean, and that's what, you sort of wonder how that's all, you know, essentially coming down. And I don't know, how do you find that out? I mean, there's got to be somewhere.
Of course, the horrible thing, too, really, is I'm sure this $2 billion is already spent in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. And, it's going for, I just, this morning, I knew we were going to talk about COVID, we walk in and we see all the firemen, you know, nobody's got a mask on, and they're pounding the truck, they're going out for a run. Jen, they're, you know, there's six guys sitting in this back seat of this thing. I mean, well, actually, there's ladies down there, too. By the way, it looked like they do a pretty good job. But, I mean, what are you doing here? We've got, I mean, and now we've, We're constantly pushing this. If everybody just would listen to us, we wouldn't have this problem. You know, I don't. To me, this is totally off the rails. But you know, I don't. I mean,
well, I was heartened on Thanksgiving, and I hope you had a good holiday. I did.
Good for you.
But on Thanksgiving Day, I went to my brother and sister in law's for the afternoon.
I hope you had less than eight.
Took the Metra, you know, which I haven't had too much opportunity to take in the last 6 months. The times I have taken it, it's been, you know, one person in a car maybe, or two people in a car, like what you've talked about with Dan,
yeah,
on the Rock Island. But on Thanksgiving Day, my local metro station here was packed with people. And they're all kind of people like me, I suspected, because they looked like they were single people.
Looking for a free meal?
You know, on their way to, you know, a family dinner of some kind. So first of all, they were out on Thanksgiving doing what they had been told not to do, which was to apparently gather. They were all dressed pretty nicely, and, you know, there was a lot of people on the train, too, more people than I ever expected to see. I said, well, this is heartening, first of all, that, you know, the Metro has some ridership. The problem was nobody ever collected tickets. I never saw a conductor anywhere.
No, they haven't.
But it was at least, you know, had a sizable collection of people, and they were all people doing what they had been specifically told not to do. So I felt very positive the whole day.
Well, we went to a pizza place that wasn't supposed to be open. Although they're still not getting very much business, so, Jen.
Everybody was talking trees and stuff.
Oh, I know. So the weird part is telling Maddie, this guy and his wife, they're sitting in this one table, and they got a big, you know, big table. And he's got, there's another lady who's older. I don't know if, you know, my the wife's, God knows who. I mean, not my job. Then he's got, like, maybe a 9-year-old daughter, blonde hair, blue eyes. Then there's two, might be like a year younger, that had to be twins. Then one maybe 2 years younger. They're crawling all over. I'm thinking, there's social distancing. I mean, come on. I mean, it's people, the, you know, I mean, I think the people who make these rules have forgotten what it's like to have a family. I mean, my brother has eight people, because that's, you know, that's the rule, right? And he's got two tables to where I can barely see the other person at the other end. So 20 minutes before we sit down to eat, everybody's sitting on the sofa watching a football game. Like what? How do you social distance eight people in a house? I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but and to make generalizations, but I do think a lot of politicians fall into two categories these days. They're either total hypocrites, where they tell you to do one thing and they do exactly
right
what they feel like doing and pay no attention to what they've just said, or they don't have families. And they have no understanding for what that means to people different from themselves. And that they're equally clueless, or maybe hypocritical to some extent, too. But that's the kind of political class we have these days. And it's, you know, they're both kind of dangerous classes of people, I think. People who are clueless or people who are crooked. So neither one is anybody I want making rules for me.
Well, I mean, you know, I go back to Richard J. Daley, and of course you read the book Boss by Mike Royko. I mean, it's maybe not a way of government that anybody, you know, maybe would want. I mean, although, you know what, John, there was a big study at the University of Chicago before I was there. It was like in the 60s. And they came out with a determination that if you compared the patronage system to the civil service system, they actually thought the patronage system was slightly more efficient. Which is interesting.
I think there's something to be said for that. At least the way it was administered in certain periods.
Yeah.
Maybe not always, but definitely at certain times, it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I saw some examples of kind of working and not working in my years as a janitor, but that's another story. There was janitors I never saw. I don't know who their fairy godmother was or whatever, but
they only existed on the payroll. That's all.
we had one gang who. I never saw the dude. So finally, after a week of not seeing him, I said, just keep him away from me. I'll just take care of everything. Because I was, at that point, I was experienced enough where the entire building, I just, you know, I would be able to take every classroom, pull all the chairs out, just back when, you know, you're young and strong, you know, scrub the whole room and varnish the floors and make everything look new. And I was capable of doing, you know, a whole school in the summer. I mean, you'd do like a room a day, right? That's a lot of rooms. And, well, you didn't do a room a day, but you pulled, you know, the chairs out of eight rooms in a day, then you, you know, you scrub this for eight, you know, whatever. I mean, you got it done. It averages out to be at least a room a day, which is pretty darn good for one guy. But finally, but this guy smokes cigarettes down to the brown filter all the way down. So you could see where he'd been because you'd see the butts laying on the ground. So the only job the guy had that he retained, like I said, I saw the dude like once. He was somehow he would take the flag in and put the flag out without me seeing him. Because what you have to, for those that don't know, you had to go to, because idiots would come and cut the rope on the flag, right? So what you would have to do is you dropped another rope out of the second floor window. So when you pull the flag down, you grabbed the flag rope and you tied it there and you hauled the rope up to the second floor window so nobody could cut it, right? I don't know if you knew that or not, but.
Oh, but I didn't. Learn something every day.
Learn something every day. So, but the guy's name was Junior, and he had the fairy godmother, right? And so they just kind of learned to. I think they have him. He did like one bathroom during the year or something. And I mean, that's all he did because they knew he couldn't. They couldn't let him loose to it in a classroom because he didn't know what he was doing. But this is years of work. Anyway, but you could tell where he had been because you'd see all the little and he literally needed one match in the morning because he would light the next cigarette with the one before. to say I didn't meet some interesting creatures was so Jan, what about this was arguing with our friend Frank, which is disgusting, which is easy to do. Love Frank because he makes you think. I'm going to say the Supreme Court decision 30 years ago is exactly the opposite. The liberals voting the other way and the conservatives voting the way the liberals voted this time.
Oh yeah, I agree completely.
Why is that?
Well, I think that the left, you know, has morphed into something that it would have been horrified to ever consider itself becoming, and that's, you know, hostile to organized religion, to a freedom of expression. These were things that the left held sacrosanct, and you think about decisions by, you know, William O. Douglas or Hugo Black, you know, even Potter Stewart, some of the more conservative, you know, Democrats on the Supreme Court. They would have... It's very easy to predict how they would have handled a case like this. It would have been always on the side of you know, the freedom of expression to practice your religion. These were enshrined principles for the Democrats. And now they become, I think, you know, just outright hostile to them. And such as, you know, to read what Sotomayor and Kagan and Roberts said in their decisions is like, are these Americans writing these, or let alone Democrats? I mean, where are they coming from? What have they let slide in their kind of pantheon of values that they could write a decision like this? The whole thing really hinged on whether you can treat churches differently from restaurants or any other, you know, public spaces, and to legislate specifically for churches, which, you know, how can that be upheld from an equal protection standpoint? But they were just, you know, out and out, sure, absolutely. You know, there's this virus is so powerful, and, you know, different, you know, distinctions can be made about where you can gather and for what purpose. I thought, well, geez, we've really crossed some Rubicon here that, you know, I didn't see it coming. But it's the problem that the left has overall, and not just on the Supreme Court, that they've backed themselves into like a, you know, Bolsheviks in preparation, you know, for something else. That they're hostile to things like Christianity, Judaism, organized religion generally, and that's.
Well, where did that all come from? And I'm trying to figure out where the, you know, the I mean, in Nazi Germany, you could say it came from Hitler. For God's sake, he wrote a book in jail what he was going to do, and he did it. You know, I mean, and he was in jail. I can't figure out who's the man behind the curtain here.
Well, it's been going on for some time, and I think academics played a significant role in changing the thinking of people in leadership, you know, roles. And by that, I mean leadership roles even in the church, and let alone in the state. But it became fashionable to turn to people like, you know, the Frankfurt School of Philosophy in literary studies or in political science. This became a kind of reaction against, you know, the liberalism of most of the 20th century. And, you know, this now became fashionable to say, well, you don't need religion. There are no standards. There are no ethical boundaries. There's no real good. There's no truth. You know, all of this, they're just like relative terms. people who are in power at the moment get to define those things. So it turned into this kind of amoral struggle to get on the top of the heap and legislate for everybody else. And I could see it even in literary studies when I was in graduate school in the 80s, when I went back after some years to get a master's. And I couldn't believe what had happened to the study of literature. It wasn't about literature anymore, or, you know, beauty and expression, or sentence rhythm, or poetic imagery. It was all about politics and, you know, gender studies and things that I had never really thought of in literary terms, or vice versa. And this became paramount, and you had to kind of write about it, and you had to, you know, do papers on it, and you had to show you knew what you were talking about. And to get a teaching job, you had to know this stuff too. So it became pernicious and you know, across the board, and it's now filtered into everything. I mean, you look at Title IX, what that's turned into, this Hydra-headed thing. It's just turned everything kind of on its head for college sports programs. I think this is an outgrowth of this kind of, you know, dispassionate look at things. This is not like mathematical problems. They're not human problems or social issues. It's just about, you know, these are theoretical problems. And once you detach yourself from morality and ethics,
well, once when there was a
results.
When a lot of it was somewhat needed. I remember, we've got to go break here for a second. I remember my mom, who was, you know, she was fairly athletic and pretty, you know, very smart on top of it. But she said, I would have loved to have played something in high school. There was nothing for girls to do. I mean, I wouldn't want to go back to that. I mean, at all. I mean,
oh, no. I'm not endorsing that at all.
I know you weren't. I'm just saying.
It's now become, you know, they legislate equality, so there has to be equal participation across the gender boundary, whatever the gender boundary of the moment happens to be. And that's just a way of putting all college sports out of business.
Well, I mean, any kind of sport is for the person. I mean, the whole idea of the money, I mean, when you start talking about scholarships and stuff, then it comes down to money, pretty much. And, you know, and then it comes down to, well, if you're not making any money off it, how do you, but the fact that there would be, you know, a guy's baseball team and not a girl's softball team, and I can't even, you know, that's crazy to me. I mean, I didn't, even before the idea
that you have to have a women's sports program across the board, whether it earns any money or not, and you have to spend as much as you do on a men's program.
Well, you're supposed to be an extracurricular activity. It's just what it is. It might as well be, it could be tiddlywinks and not football, although we're charging $100 a ticket for football. Just saying. SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures up 28. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board right this moment. Mr. John Flanagan with us as well. SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures down 28. Yeah, I have a question for our Stocks and Jocks. Dave, if you're there, man, I love your input, or Manny who's ever there. Friday, of course, when you own the Suburban, John, you end up having every once in a while, hey, you doing anything Friday? How about moving a table for me type of thing? That's just what happens if you own a pickup truck or equivalent. But no problem. I don't mind at all. And so anyway, we go down and this gentleman I was helping, a guy here from the firm, his older brother's there and he's got two fake knees, so he's not moving too much. But he's got his granddaughter with her. And you know, she's got more energy than God, for God's sake. And of course, I start talking to her. She's a soccer player, evidently quite accomplished. And she was a freshman playing with the varsity and her high school team, but I don't know if the high school's playing. But now she's on this club team. But it's not AAU, it's something else. Has there been huge inroads into girls' soccer by some sort of an AAU organization? She goes, yeah, I play most of my games for this, she named the club. And she's a sophomore now in high school. Are they the inroads there? I said, well, so if somebody wants to recruit you for college, who do they come talk to, your high school coach or this club team? She goes, well, both probably, but right now our club team's high school's not playing. We're going to have to do we need to get our buddy Dave Murphy in someday and talk about all this, because the inroads into this amateur athletics is really something, John. I mean, I assume it's good. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but it clearly takes kind of the schools sort of out of the mix, doesn't it? I mean, it's, David, have you heard, or Randy who's ever there, what's your view of this? I mean, is it rampant all over the place here? I mean, I didn't know that.
I know that there's been a real transformation just in the kind of, you know, opportunities you have beyond what your school offers. And, you know, but, you know, it does change the dynamics when it comes to competition and to allegiance and building, you know, team spirit, which is always bound up with your school, too. So I can't say it's good or bad, and I don't know that much about it, but I would be interested in knowing more, because it's a symptom of something. Not sure what exactly, but kind of the lack of ability of the schools to kind of, you know, provide opportunities anymore, or to afford them, or to make them available to all the people who want them, so people go elsewhere, and you can't blame them for that. Well, I'll defer to people who know more about this than I do.
Well, some of them used to, and I know, you know, in our era, John, I mean, if you played basketball or something for the team, as soon as that was over, I mean, everybody knew what park everybody was every night, and you played ball every night. You know, I mean, or every, you know, and then there were some park leagues, but it was never that organized, but you played every day. There were spots where all the good guys went and played pickup and those kinds of things. I mean, where you essentially all did it, but now it seems like all that sort of organized. Is that just because people are living in places where you need a car to get from place to place, or kids can't organize on their own, or I don't want to indict a whole generation by saying you can't get a game together. I don't think that's true. It just seems, but now is there money involved? Are these guys, do you go to one of these things? Do you have to pay to get in? I know, even the guy, engineer here in the building, who does some work for me once in a while, his son plays at the soccer facility out next to where the soccer thing in, tell us the name of it, near southwest suburb,
the Toyota
Park. Well, there's a bubble next to it that these kids play indoors, and it's $5-$10 to get in and watch them. I mean, does that cover a coach? I mean, what's the economics of this stuff? I mean, I'm not saying anything untoward going on, but at some level, are they paying kids? If they want the good kids or not, I mean, I suspect they're not at this level, but at some point, could they be? I mean, the whole demise of the AAU when you and I were young, in track and those other things, the NCAA basically kicked them out of existence. Now they're making massive inroads over the last 20 years, essentially with younger kids. And they pick up right where high school lets off. I mean, and I think they have huge inroads in with the girls' basketball and volleyball. But the soccer looks like a totally different organization. It just was new to me. I guess I should have known something that it was even existed. And it's always surprised me when there's something I know nothing about. John, it happens all the time, I guess.
Well, this is a research opportunity for me. So
yeah, but where do you, as you as we go forward now, we've got 50 days of the new transition, and we've got, you know, Joe Biden trying to, I don't know, whatever he's doing. So every single person of the White House press corps is female. Have you saw that?
Yep.
I don't have any issue with that, but if you were today's day and age, say everyone you hired in a certain group was male, I think you'd get some pushback.
As you should.
I mean, how far are we going here? I mean, every doctor that he hired for the team is female, for the COVID team. Actually, might have been one, might be a guy. I mean, are we trying to get the best people available everywhere?
Clearly not, Tom. I mean, a guy who would say, I'm going to pick a vice, you know, presidential candidate, a running mate from one gender group, and then ultimately from one racial group, you know, or one racial group and then one gender group, I think was the order in which he did it. I don't think too much of a guy who thinks that way. I mean, to me, he's just pandering to that group or groups and expecting other people to see that there's wisdom in this somehow, and I see no wisdom in that kind of selection. And it's the same thing with the press corps appointments, and I suspect it'll be in every appointment now. If it's not a gender group that's being played to, it'll be some other interest group that the Democrats think they can control or keep, you know, in their umbrella, ever expanding or trying to expand their tent of people by treating them as, you know, subordinates or people we can delegate spots to. And it's going to be, you know, assuming Biden's in there, it's going to be four years of this kind of nut stuff. So I think we have to get used to it, but it's not going to go down very easily with me. We're getting a pretty warped group of people in some very sensitive spots. Wait till you see the cabinet appointments.
Well, I mean, but there's always a flip side. We've had some really bad vice presidents because we didn't care where the dummy came from. We didn't care who he was as long as he came from, you know, some state that we needed.
The state we needed, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like, I mean, I would certainly will say that Kamala Harris is a better pick than, like, Spiro Agnew. I mean, it's not like we haven't had clunks in there before. And I'm not saying she's a clunk. I'm just saying that it's at some point, I mean, you got to say that the first African American or first female has to be, you know, it has to be Jackie Robinson. But the simple fact is, there's been a lot of people in there of dubious. The best was Roosevelt, right? I mean, he had somebody for three terms, and the one time they got the idea he might actually be president, they couldn't wait to dump the guy, right? and put Truman in there. So whoever the first guy was, he couldn't have been the most talented. So it's not like, you know, that it's. I mean, you and I are, you know, the educational system that we're in, we would always like to pick the absolute best person. And I would say, if it were me, if two people came up with an exact tie, and I've never had a lady in there before, never had an African American in there before, an Asian person, or a Hispanic, I might flip the bone to the Asian or the woman or the Hispanic or the African American, just because but it'd have to be a tie. And I'd maybe do it
right,
once.
As a tiebreaker, there's worse ways of breaking a tie than that, certainly.
And I do that once.
Selecting the pool of people that you're even going to look at. There's no tiebreaker possible there. So.
Well, yeah. But then you have to also consider your age, and you have to consider, is the person's politics that much different than mine that if all of a sudden, you know, I croak 2 days into this, do I really want that in here to that extent? I don't know. I mean, maybe the answer is yes, maybe the answer is no. I mean, I just, in general, on both the Republican and the Democrat side, the idea of these people, I go back to, like I said, Richard J. Daley, I mentioned earlier. I mean, he, in terms of government, you know, I don't know, there's a lot of people that didn't like what he did, or, you know, especially the history of it and how it's been written. But the simple fact is the man knew how the city worked. You weren't going to get him to shut down every place and then 3 months later say, I can't believe I'm broke. I mean, you know, he knew he would be broke if he did that, right? I mean,
right, and also, you know, put a high premium on having a stellar credit rating for the city.
Yeah.
So the city could never, it never had a difficulty, you know, floating any kind of bond issue or getting money or, you know, building things. Those were flush times, and Daley didn't really know how to do it any differently. Whatever other failings he had, he ran it a very tight ship, I think. So that's you know, those days are long gone. I think when it comes to American big cities, somebody who could do that wouldn't really be appreciated today. That's not a valuable thing to know how to spend money wisely. That there's no premium placed on that anymore.
Well, I just don't think that, and I don't know how you get a read on this, or how you even sort of fix it. And I always go back to, if somebody's, laying in a morgue and you want to decide to get the body going again, where do you start? I mean, there's so many things that have to happen in a human body for the thing to be alive and healthy. It's got to be, 90 bazillion little functions going on every half a second. I mean, you don't just get to say, gee, if I get this thing breathing again, it'll work. Or if I get it pooping again, it'll work. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that has to happen, right? And I don't think, and I would not want the job after studying this stuff my whole life and attracting people around me that are pretty darn smart. I mean, for the show, I think, and for my business, the idea of how you get this downtown area with the massive infrastructure, with the new railroad cars you're building, how you get this stuff back working again. Hey, boy, oh boy, Jen. I'm not so sure what number one would be. I mean, we're talking people 2 and 3 years now out, some areas talking about, well, I'm not going to open that restaurant in that building and the liability. And what is a new lease going to look like compared to an old lease? I mean, where do you think we are in that process, and people not paying their rent or maybe not paying it, and people not paying their mortgage, people not paying their tab? I mean, what inning are we in there? I mean, you know that more than me.
Well, I think it's a cataclysmic event about to happen in the next 6 months, because we're going to see a lot of people who have been kind of dangled along with promises, stick it out, mortgage whatever you can, borrow, keep the thing going on some kind of hope that everything will return to normal by December. Well, it's clear that, we're talking December 2021 now at the earliest, if you listen to Fauci and other people. So those people have been already stretched to the max, I think, when it comes to keeping their head above water. 2021 is going to see a lot of buildings, a lot of businesses fail. And, I can see evidence of that even in my neighborhood, of little storefronts that came and went over the summer, where I thought, well, somebody's trying to start a grocery store here or a nail salon or something else. And I guess they're going to see if things can, lighten up a little bit, because then they can expand or hire more people. They're gone. Those spaces are vacant again now. So I think there were false hopes for a lot of small business owners that they could, start something in this time period with whatever positive signs there were. And that's all evaporated. And I think it's going to continue to evaporate. And it's probably going to be like a sucking sound that you hear everywhere you go. There's going to be vacancies everywhere, and not just, businesses, but rental places and everything else. People are going to be just out on the street, and whatever people can say about Mayor Lightfoot and whatever positive she has, she's a complete neophyte when it comes to running a big city. She's never run a big anything, let alone one that's.
I don't think she could run a restaurant.
Right? Or could she run a Wendy's?
Yeah.
I don't know. She never showed that she could. So. I guess maybe there's a lot of things she could do, but running a big city in times like this is not something I would feel too comfortable about with her in charge. So, and she's an example of other big city mayors who are clearly in over their heads now. They don't know, they can't focus enough on any one thing, because they don't know enough about any one thing to decide how it's going to fit into a bigger picture if things ever get back on their feet, or how to begin getting them back on their feet. And nobody seems to have any solutions for that. And the governors are probably worse as a group, maybe even than the big city mayors. So.
Well, Jen, when you taught for a while, and went and got some advanced degrees, and I know that especially in the economics area, the thing that would always was the most difficult part of these guys, the University of Chicago. They didn't do too much of this in Notre Dame, and they were teaching at a little lower level, so there were sort of answers to all the questions that they asked you. So if you studied enough and went to class, you could come up with, quote, the answers, right?
The answers were somewhere, yeah.
The answers were somewhere. I was pretty good at, well, first of all, if I had to give advice on people who are going to class, college isn't that difficult. If you go to class, if you take notes, the person will tell you, I don't mean it takes notes anymore. You take notes, the person will tell you what he or she thinks is important. All you have to do is listen. You write those down. And then you go through the stuff that night. So the night before the test, you go over it again. So it's really like the fourth time you touched it, and it's pretty easy to recall the next day. If you miss any one of the four, or certainly any two of the four, you got a problem. Because you don't know what they, you got some huge book and you have no idea what in the book the guy thinks is important, right? So anyway, so you got a problem. But the hardest part was the University of Chicago, where guys like Friedman and Stigler and those guys, their style was, John, we're going to shut down, Matty Weber's hot dog stand because, there's, typhoid in there or something. We didn't know anything about COVID back then. We're going to shut him down for a month. Work this way through the rest of society, all the suppliers, anybody this might affect, but work all the way down from the top. And you're sitting there going, oops. So you're supposed to come up with the questions and the answers, essentially. And I don't think any of these people have ever had any of that kind of training. Not that I can say I did. It was 45 years ago, and I'm not so sure I was all that good at it then. But at least you would have the question that said, all right, if I do this, something's going to happen, right? I can't just stop tomorrow and say, okay, I'm just going to close this place for 2 weeks. Everything's okay. Well, it's not okay. Now, I mean, it becomes down to stuff like if I would have told everybody that on St. Patrick's Day, because I remember that's the day we shut down, you couldn't go to the bar on St. Patrick's Day. I knew the year was going to suck when that was a declaration. If you just would have said, we're shutting everything down for like 2 years, which of course they never would have got away with, and everybody owned any saloon, anybody owns a restaurant, anybody owns a cleaners, whatever it is, if you would have just said, well, I got, 150 grand in the bank, I've been pretty successful, I'm just shutting the doors. I'm telling the renter, see you in 2 years, maybe then, maybe never. You would have all kinds of problems that work your way through society, all right? But by and large, the person is leaving with whatever nest egg they might have had, which, again, creates problems. I mean, that would be one exam, right? What happens when that happens? But then if you got a test that said, oh, we're going to tell these guys 30 days, we're going to extend it to 60 and 90, and then we're going to let everybody open at half staff or half or a quarter size. So everybody now thinks they're going to reopen, so they work their way through their savings and so forth. Or, to their credit, the federal government printed up some money and gave it to them, so basically carried most people the first 45 to 60 days, right? 90 days maybe? 75 days, probably better. So now you've done that. So you essentially push people to July without a whole hell of a lot of damage if you've got people with timing issues where you've got waitresses and bartenders and waiters that, were 6 weeks late on their, 8 weeks late on their unemployment. So they've already gotten tossed out of their place and already behind on their credit cards and their credit rating's going to zero. So they're going to get a $4,000 check late. And you think they're whole, but they're not. So that's ignorant on top of it, right? The guy at the state thinks he just made somebody whole. They didn't. They're already living in mom's basement. So we've got ignorant people all over the place in the government, the bureaucrats. So now you've got somebody, you close them again. And now they're deep into the 150 or 200 grand in retained earnings is gone, right, Jen?
Right.
Maybe you're on your credit cards, or maybe you've put money into the building from your personal stuff, and your wife or husband is ready to hit you upside the head with a cast iron pot for doing that. Now you're buzzing through your savings. Now here we are damn near a year later. We're shutting down again for the winter. And oh, by the way, if you go out to the canvas guy, you might be able to have five tables outside for 100 grand or 50 grand for a canvas tent if the price goes up every day. Or you just close down again. And maybe you'll be open. When are we even talking now? Never? I mean, what's the date for these guys now? I mean, when's the Tripoli Tap going to be able to people at the bar again? We're not even giving them a date now, are we? We're not saying a month, 2 months.
Oh, no. Or worse. I mean, it's bad enough that you've fed these people these false hopes and made them dig deeper holes for themselves to try to hang on. But now you play with their patience and their attention span, so you keep throwing different headlines at them every 6 hours. Lockdown coming, or, possible tweaking of this, or, no liquor sales after this hour, after this hour, after this hour. It makes people crazy after a while that if you're not, like the example you sent around about the 49ers on the plane coming home finding they don't have a place to play in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little sudden, I would say. It shows poor planning.
If anybody didn't hear this.
In very kindest ways.
Whatever, what county is San Francisco County, whatever the hell they're in?
I think Alameda is, well, no, San Francisco County is San Francisco, the city. Then there's Alameda, where Oakland is.
Yeah.
Oakland is the seen. So,
well, wherever San Francisco has their facility, and I don't know if people, if the guys are having a bubble there, if they're staying there. I mean, I don't know what their details are, but they essentially went out of town to play out of the county. While they were gone, the county said, oh, by the way, if you're out, you might have to quarantine for 14 days when you come back, and you can't have any contact sports of any kind in the county for the next month. So they got two home games left. It's like, where did that come from? And, you know, for people that have been allegedly in a bubble and they're testing every day and all this other kind of stuff. So this constant, it just goes to show you, John, when you elect people, that when you don't care who the hell they are, you don't care, as long as they're Democrat, as long as they're Republican, as long as they're black, as long as they're white, as long as they're male, as long as they're female, you get some buffoon in there that doesn't know how to handle a crisis, and you get a crisis. And what if I was watching all stuff about World War II this weekend. What if the British would have had, you know, any one of the Mickey the Mole politicians we have around now, what if they had Jay Pritzker there instead of Churchill? What would the world look like, for God's sake? Pick anybody. I mean, Donald Trump.
Probably look like Illinois.
What if Donald Trump was there? I mean, what if we had somebody who absolutely is no possible connection or training for the job they're in? And we have that all over the place. And for a while, it's kind of funny. Well, let's just put anybody in. But it also dumbs down society. It just goes to show you, with Denver not having any of the quarterbacks play and how horrible they look. No, anybody just can't go in the NFL and play quarterback on Sunday. Duh. You know, I mean, everybody thinks they can. I mean, oh, I can be mayor. I can be president. No, you can't. Well, you can, but you'd be a pretty lousy one.
I got to catch my breath here for a minute. You're giving me too much to laugh at.
I could play with, what was the song, Put Me in Coach, I'm Ready to Play Center Field Today or something? Where? I couldn't play center field when I was 25, much less now. I mean, who's kidding who? Matty Weber's our center fielder, you know? Back when
the guy in the progressive insurance commercial who keeps kicking the ball into the goalpost and hitting the goalpost. So we want that guy.
So, but it's a total dumbing down of society. I mean, what are we doing? You know, the thing that boggles my mind is I listen to all these people on this COVID. I keep coming back to this, not just because it's affecting everybody, but I've been just astounded at the leadership. There is absolutely no. We have, I'm going to say, John, we probably have somewhere between the Chicago. Let's take Illinois for instance. 700,000 people have tested positive. We have no idea whether the same people are testing positive every day or testing negative every day, because I don't think anybody knows that there's
or any... Or how long these people have been positive, perhaps since March or April, for all we know.
Well, you can't be positive.
These are advancing numbers that are changing with new cases every week. It might be the same numbers we've had for 6 months, but we're just discovering that fact.
Well,
who knows?
Well, I'm saying, early on, the random samples in Indiana and a few other states said that, this is when you weren't testing people so many times because they didn't have a test, that they thought 10 to 11 times as many people had it than the numbers were. All right, so again, how does this affect stocks and jacks? Well, it affects the economy. So now I'm going to say that number is not 10 to 11, John. I don't know it, because now with the abundance of tests around, I'm going to say it's probably more like 4 to 5 times as many people have had it over this whole period of time as have been counted, right? I can tell you all kinds of people that back in April and May that were told not to come in. Yeah, you got it, but what's the point of coming in, because all you're going to do is give it to somebody else, you know, that kind of stuff. Or people had no symptoms. So you've got, I'm going to say in the state of Illinois, you've got 3 to 4 million people that have had it, which is roughly what, 35 to 40% of the population?
Yeah.
A little more. So these people, including me, by the way, have the antibodies. Now, we refuse to throw any of those people, including me, a bone. And I still have to throw my mask on when I go in a store or create havoc. Places are still closed to me unless you know the places to go. And I'm going to say that my antibodies might be as good, might not be as good, nobody knows, as in terms of length of they'll protect me and people around me than this vaccine. I'm hoping the vaccine's a lot better, but nobody knows that. We won't know that for, however, 2, 3, 4 years. And nobody knows how good the antibodies are for 2, 3, 4 years, till people like me start getting it again, which hasn't happened yet. I mean, one or two people, yes, but in general, people that were sick in April have not gotten sick again, right? We'll all know that day when it comes, because we have a lot more people. So now we have the Those 3 million people will never be thrown a bone. They're totally ignored by who's ever in charge in any state or local or federal level. And yet we're going to require everybody to go get this vaccine unproven. I mean, this can't be happening in a rational society. This can't
be. Or worse, that you're becoming the victim of some draconian, you know, contact tracing system where your contact with somebody else gets you in trouble because you've been, you know, identified as somebody who has tested positive. So that you are inadvertently shutting down businesses everywhere you go because people now are claiming that you're the cause of something that needs addressing, and, you know, you're not really doing anything at this point at all. Certainly when it comes to compromising other people's health, at least there's no evidence that you are. But, you know, it's to me, it's the quintessential victory of the stupid over the smart town. The stupid people have figured out a way to whittle away at people who were trying to survive economically, financially, keep things going. And the dumb people have the control, and they are able to tweak it, you know, the nose of the people who have had enough smarts to keep things going for generations, and now they're going to be put under by the dumb people. And, you know, it's a ruling class of politicians that they're real, you know, shared skill set seems to be stupidity and a lack
Let's go to break, and when we come back, though, this has happened twice before in our lifetime. Huge. Resolution Trust and the 2008 fiasco, where they turned out to be very, very clear winners. Now, the question is, these politicians, the politics they're doing, it's not their own ideas. I mean, clearly Pfizer's setting themselves up to be a massive winner, no matter what. But who are going to be the winners? SP Futures up down 10 and a quarter now. NASDAQ Futures up 20. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Station Jax. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures down 11. NASDAQ Futures up 10. I told John we're going to do something after the break, and we're not, because he's off. He's gone. But I'm just stumbling around here. Dow Futures down 146. DAX down 68. I'm sorry, up 68.5%. FTSE up 10.1%. CAC around down 8.1%. So DAX up, the rest mixed. Over in Asia, though, the other way. Down. Nikkei down 211.8%. Now, those guys have been way up, so that's not much of a drop there. But Shanghai down 16.5%. This is a big one. Hang Seng down 5.53.2%. This review of Friday, up Dow was up 37 and a half day. S&P up 8, and the NASDAQ up 111. NASDAQ was down early in the day and really rallied in as the day closed. Bonds, 10-year 0.86. One minus 0.57. I should just put this on a tape, Dave. What do you think? Every day it's the same number.
Yeah.
Japan up at positive 2%. Not sure why that's going nowhere with all the stuff the Fed's doing, but it is. Oil down 44 cents, 45.09. Rent down 57 cents, 47.61. Natural gas up 9 cents, 2.93. And this is the one that perplexes me every day. Gold down 12 bucks, 17.75. I keep thinking it's a buy down here and then it goes lower. Silver down 41 cents, 22.14. But copper up another 7 cents at 346. Boy, these guys will buy it. I think they got down to 202, 212, somewhere in there. Wow. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Good morning. 736 in Chicago. Traffic still fairly light for a Monday morning, starting to pick up. In weather today, Chicago now cloudy and 34 degrees, which will be our high. We're expecting snow showers to the south side. Southeast side, 1 to 3 inches. Phoenix today is sunny, 52 and clear. The high, 74 and sunny. In sports, again, full slate of college basketball and college football. Notre Dame moved to 9-0, beating North Carolina 31-17. And our Chicago Bears, another defeat on a primetime game, losing to Green Bay 41-25. Arizona lost a heartbreaker to New England with a last-second field goal.
Kansas City almost lost, even though they played great.
Yeah, Kansas City tried to lose.
Yeah. I got a question for you. Mike, are you with us?
Mike's with us.
Now, Mike has got to be beaming this morning because his Bills are on top of the world.
Yes, it was another nice win for Buffalo. And, wow, we haven't had a season like this since 1995, I think.
I'm thinking, who was the quarterback? I met the guy once. The hell's his name? 4 years.
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly, yeah. He ended up surviving that throat cancer, didn't he?
He did. It's an amazing story. I believe they did a 30 for 30 movie presentation on that in particular, and he's got a tremendous life that he lived.
Yeah, he's a pretty good guy, I think. Hey, we'll talk to Joel tomorrow to see if his team's going to go. If Michigan conjures up a bunch of COVID cases and doesn't play Ohio State's screwed then, right? They won't have six games. They can't be in the Big Ten tournament.
Is that how it works? I'm not really sure.
I think it's, you got to play six games now. I don't know if that means for the national championship. That would be interesting if Big Ten wouldn't let them in their conference game, and yet they still got in the final four. That'd be interesting. I don't know how that would work, but
it's an unbelievable season. I think this season has to have an asterisk by it for all the record books.
Oh, I would say yeah. I mean, did they ever remove the Roger Maris asterisk, or is that still in there?
That I don't know.
There was one in there, wasn't there? But then you also have to ask yourself, when the guys that were the original 50 goal scorers in hockey, the season was 50 games, and then when you go to 76 and you score 50, it's obviously got to be different. You would think, anyway.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
All right, Mike, you got to edumacate us, as my grandmother used to say. What's going on here? We've got a little bit of a honeymoon for Biden and all new people come in. We've got Janet Yellen, which on the one hand will tell you that the Treasury and the Fed will be working, I guess, hand in glove. The other side of that is so much for independence. So, I mean, I'm having trouble summing this all up here. So what do you have in terms of volatility and the markets? I mean, sure. Continues to go up, and what do you got? What do you got?
Well, here's what I got. So we're in an interesting kind of transition period. Now, I would say, like, there's volatility that's just going to hang out in the market here. And you can call it, like, the changing of the guard or the changing of the status quo. But that's always going to put a level of volatility in the market whenever you're changing things around. So a lot of things are changing around up top with the new president. And what we're seeing right now is we're not seeing negative market reaction to it. And we're not seeing extremely positive in the sense that we're making new highs, but we are just hanging out near the high. You know, the market's down a little bit today, maybe down 15 points or so. But that being said, that's a very small pullback. If you look at the chart of the S&P 500, where it's been and kind of the ranges it's moved in, the move down today is very small. Now, volatility, it's up a little bit on this move down today, so we're up a full dollar. And 11 cents on volatility. So volatility is trading right around the 22 handle. I say this every time I come on the show, Tom. The historical average, if you look back to 1990, and you said, what is the average VIX print that we saw over the course of the past 30 years? And that's 15.5. So that is the mean print that we see on the VIX. We're trading well above it at 22, basically, 22. IV is pretty decent. So what does that mean? It means option prices are going to be slightly inflated. They're going to be trading at a premium. And it means the market is anticipating more movement in the coming year.
Well, what it seems like there's a... I mean, I don't know how I can even describe this, but there's we're not kind of going back and forth. We go one direction for a long time, and all of a sudden we change ideas, even though we're in somewhat of a range. I mean, right now, it looks like everybody, state, local, is looking to the federal government. Right now, everything you are asking for out of the new administration is somewhat of an S, a yes, modified yes, one way or the other. The state's going to get bailed, or people are going to get bailed, everything's going to get bailed. Yet at the end of the day, someplace, somewhere, just money-wise, there's got to be a no, or if there isn't, you're going to see some inflation number like the likes of which we've ever seen, in my opinion. So I don't know how you get around that. I mean, I don't see how these guys pop out another $2 or $3 trillion and not have it. You know, the idea of, well, how are you going to pay for that type of thing?
I mean, well, you know, this has been the ultimate kick the can down the road. I mean, we bolted the can down the road as far as you can imagine. I mean, we've kicked it as far as we can, and you're right. I mean, that the time to kick the can is coming up rapidly. It's approaching. We're going to have to kick the can down the road again in order to keep sort of this house of, I'm not going to call it a house of cards, but it's definitely a house built on this necessity of stimulus to keep things, just to keep grease in the system, money in the system.
Well, it's funny, Mike, somewhere, if you come back in one of these days, which I'm sure you will, I'll promise to dig through you've seen my filing system. I don't know if you'd call it a filing system, but a mess. In there is a piece of paper, an article from like 5 years ago. And they went back through all the way back to, you know, the Depression damn near. And they talked about, essentially governance during business cycle recessions. And business cycle recessions are somewhat normal. I mean, you know, things get too hot and people borrow too much and all of a sudden a few people, you know, pay too much for something like a stock and then it goes back the other way. But, you know, a few businesses get corked out and a few others start up and you have this cycle and it's somewhat normal, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's drinking versus hangover type of thing. You know, there's a lot of cycles like that in human history. And the interesting part is, you said the government, not just ours, but other governments in history, that the trick is to essentially do nothing because the society will fix itself. And in virtually every type of one of these depressions, in fact, you had people back in the 60s known as like the whiz kids before your time a little bit, the McNamara's of the world and those guys that thought you could actually fine tune the economy to where if you saw the market going, not the market, the economy, even I do it, even though I shouldn't. So the economy slowing down a little bit, you'd like immediately cut your taxes, you know, by 2% or something. So you would essentially smooth out the normal business cycle. But because Congress moved so slow, it always ended up that the tax decrease or increase kind of hit when the change had already taken place and you actually accentuated the wings instead of made them smaller. So that didn't work out so well. But every once in a while, being at the Great Depression in 2008 and maybe now, something so totally different that you can't just kick it down the road, you actually got to fix something. And I believe this is one of those times, and I don't know if our guys are up to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't think this is the type of thing that you can continually kick the can down the road, because there's a true shift going on in the economy, a true change in the way money is being produced, the different way in the way wealth creation is being created. So with these changes is, you know, certain things are going to have to become less heavily dependent upon in the economy, and some things are going to be the big winners of it. So I think the change is the process that we're trying to soften the blow right now, and that can be their only hope. It perpetually doing this, I don't see it being a reasonable solution to some of the huge problems that we're sitting on. To be honest with you, I am always surprised at how low the volatility is, given all of these world events and all of these current market events that are out there. The market is surprisingly showing, I say, only 22 volatility points in VIX, but still, it's only 22. We know this thing's as high earlier this year as 85, which is, by the way, the highest it's ever been, was this year in February.
The highest VIX has ever been, yeah. Implied volatility was higher in 87.
That's true.
But, I mean, with some of the, I guess the, you know, when you, obviously you've studied the modern market more than I have, modern market theory more than I have, but, I mean, the old market theory was that you had these constant random shocks that were always hitting the market. Most of them were small. I mean, obviously earnings and stuff were bigger. But they were pretty much a constant stream of information that keeps hitting not only the market but the individual stocks and so forth, and a lot of it is not predicted. Or if it is predicted, so many people are studying it so well that it's already baked into the price, right? I mean, it was very tough. I mean, it's one thing to get a piece of information on a stock. Hey, my buddy says buy XYZ. It's quite another to think that your buddy is the only person in the world that read that piece of news, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, it may be new to you, but it's probably not new to the world, even though your ego might think that it is, type of thing. Mm-hmm. But there's some of the stuff that you can see coming down the road here, Mike. I can probably name 50 possible things that could happen that are so outliers to anything that is, quote, normal. You know, Illinois declaring bankruptcy. Or, I mean, so, something bizarre. I mean, we still talk about long-term capital, and that was 20 years ago, for God's sake. 22 yep. years ago. And that would, I mean, we have the potential of like 30 of those things happen in the next 2 years. Not just one. I mean, every week now.
And the real probability of it happening has gone up as well. So, you know, these outlier moves are typically 5, 6, 7 standard deviations away from the norm. And, you know, you can calculate a probability around that of being 0.0001, things like that. And, you know, you say, well, it's ticked up a little bit, but that probability has gone up somewhat of outlier events actually taking place. And there are plenty of, you know, people who study black swan events and tail risk. Is also what we like to call it, is tail risk. And that's just the idea that you have these normal distributions, and on the ends of these normal distributions are fat tails, and those fat tails are attributed to those one or two times, you know, we saw it in 2008, we saw it a little bit this year, where you get those big, big movements that nobody saw coming.
Well, I don't know, let's put it this way, you and I didn't see coming. But
that's
I mean,
true.
I mean, because I just don't think we have the information. I'm starting to get some headlines, nothing like I'm getting on a back burner or anything. I'm starting to get some headlines of Chinese defaults. I don't know if you're seeing the same thing. I have no idea, Mike, who's involved. I have no idea how big. Somebody has this information somewhere. I don't know if it's the Fed or somebody. But then all of a sudden I get something last week from one of my, I don't know, I think it was one of my writer wing guys. Was talking about all the money the Fed was pouring in even before the COVID even started, where they were talking about repos and so forth. And the repo market was no good. And how there was somebody somewhere went under and Citigroup went right with them and was essentially a bailout. I mean, I would never take this information and trade on it. I haven't, so please don't. But, I mean, this is stuff. If this actually happening, Mike, how is it two guys like you and me that are our job is to be on the pulse of the market? I have no idea if the Fed's bailing out Citigroup. Do you?
And it's no, we have no idea, and, you know, we can't possibly predict the future in that sense. I mean, we can put our judgments towards it, but ultimately what it comes down to, and I think every trader needs to make their own opinion about this or form an assumption around it, but, you know, I tend to fall on the efficient market theory in the sense that I go on the fact that prices are pretty darn fair that are out there, and there's a huge world of traders and investors putting their votes in on what they want, buy it or sell it, and there becomes sort of an efficiency in the pricing. So the idea that is there, you know, some type of arbitrage out there where something's just priced way below the market and no one sees it, I go on the assumption that those aren't there and everything is priced fairly. It makes it a lot easier when you start running bigger type models, which is what I do. It's easier when you make larger assumptions like that. So I'm not saying for your own personal trading, it might be fun to still like pick and choose stocks that way. But I think, you know, ultimately it does come down to the idea, you know, are markets efficient? And if they are, then the news and everything associated with it that's public is in there.
Yeah, I just wonder back in, you know, when I say the guys who were in Chicago way back in the day when they get all these firms. Of course, you know, they charge more for commission, so I guess they could pay all these guys. I don't know. But I'm not saying that was good or bad. I mean, it probably wasn't good for the, but I mean, the idea of markets being efficient was because you had so many people, that's all they did was constantly look at all these things and make all these decisions. They were efficient because you had, you know, 20,000 swinging idiots, trying to make sure that the market was efficient. So you almost couldn't beat them. That was the conclusion, right? But now you see this momentum stuff. You see companies not giving guidance. You see it harder and harder to get that information. I'm not so sure that any of that stuff works today. I mean, that the theory works today. I mean, I see stuff like, I mean, I to the life of me, not just because I'm befuddled by it, because I get befuddled by a lot of things. I see no reason why copper has made a 50% move up and silver can't get out of its own way. I mean, copper is more of an industrial metal than silver, but silver's half and half. I mean, you wonder, because I think it's more one's going up and the other one's not. I mean, I almost think if you and I could list some turtle eggs in Kenya, you know, on the market and in the New York, and it was going up every day, and we talked about it on CNBC, we could get everybody wanting to buy it even though they didn't know what they were. You know, I mean, I just think the world is changing in that regard. These firms don't have, I mean, Charles Schwab doesn't have 50 analysts running around trying to price stuff like they did 40 years ago.
Well, you know, I don't think efficient market negates randomness. So I think the market's still random in the sense that, you know, prices every day, it's a 50-50 shot. Every day, it's 50-50 up or down. Now, over time, we have studied the market, and we know there's actually a 53% chance of the upside, 47% of the downside. And that's just with the natural skew that's in the market or positive drift. You can associate that with the risk-free rate of return, but there is a positive drift in the market. But for the most part, any day that you go in, it is a 50-50. It's a true 50-50 shot of whether the market goes up or goes down. It's really interesting when you break it down to statistics.
Well, I think that's true. I also think that if you and I were to spend 2 weeks at Camp David or someplace, where they supposedly have the world's greatest pool tables there. They got like eight of them. But so when we weren't shooting pool, we were studying the market. Or we bring some guys with us to do all the studying for us. We wouldn't want to do that, right? That's what you got guys for. I'm going to say if you went back all the way to 1968, I'm not good at going back further than that. Virtually every big move in the market was caused by the Fed. Not in general, not in the fact that, you know, the market was 881 and it's 3,000 now. That wasn't the Fed, even though they have the amount of money in the system is way more than it was. I'm not going to say that, but everything that, you know, the rallies before 2000, the sell-off after, the rallies in 68 and then the sell-offs to 82, if you looked at the Fed activity, you can pretty much almost look at what the Fed did, wait 2 or 3 months for it to work its way through the system, and you'll see the market move. I mean, virtually every single time, big moves were the Fed screwing up. Now, this time, the COVID probably caused the one earlier in the year. You know, that I can't blame that one on the Fed. But by and large, well, the rally back is virtually all Fed. I mean, there's no, I'm going to say even the biggest bull, Mike, if you were to say last year that, in December, that there would be, what did Carnac, you know, Johnny Carson, Mr. Hart, we're going to have a COVID, we're going to have something called a COVID, a worldwide pandemic that's going to send the market down, whatever we were down, what, 20% or 15% by, you know, whatever. And at the end of the year, the COVID situation is going to be worse than it was at the beginning. Where would the market be? You probably wouldn't say you'd make all that back and more unless you knew the Fed was doing something. It's counterintuitive that you would make all that back. Individual
stock. It absolutely is counterintuitive. It's surprising, and it does go to show the power of Fed activity and the power of the ultimate power that the Fed does have over the monetary supply. I mean, which is what they're supposed to have power over. But it makes a true difference in the stock market. And you're right. Given all of these inputs that we've had this year, all of these different things that could have seriously negatively affected, it caused a depression of epic scale. We're just not seeing that. We're actually seeing stocks trending near the high and moving with relative ease up there with volatility at 21.
Well, but you also have what percentage of the economy, the regular economy, you think is in a depression or is in a recession?
I'm going to defer to you on that. What would you say?
If recession is two bad quarters and a depression is, I'm going to say there's 20 to 30% of the population's lost a significant portion of their wealth. So they're they're negative on the year by far, right? I mean, I got to believe it could be pushing 30, 40%.
I think you're absolutely right on that. I think, you know, when you look at the population and you look at the normal statistics around what would equal a depression, we're probably there on many of the boxes that you might check. But we certainly aren't there from an economic perspective. So, how do you remedy the two? There's got to be some remedy in between, or you're going to have a true disconnect between the public that is out of work and has been displaced, and the economy, which it seems to be roaring back. But you can't have that disconnect exist for a very long time, because eventually it causes a tear in the crack, or, you know, cracks start to form, and it just won't be able to support it, be my guess.
Well, Mike, real quick, because we only have about 40 seconds, I was listening to Margaret Brennan, I don't know if you heard this yesterday, and the mayor of El Paso said, even though we think a lot of the transfer of the COVID is in the big box stores, I can't close them because they've been considered by whatever the national CDC as being, you got to have them, right? And she says, why don't you close more of the other places to make up for it? When I heard that, I go, now I know why we're in the problem we're in. Let's beat that kid, even though he didn't do it, because I can't find the one who did. It's like, for God's sake. Anyway, Mike, thank you very much, buddy. Good stuff as usual. SP Futures down 8 and NASDAQ Futures up 16. We seeing you tomorrow or Jeff? He's gone. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.